The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. 6 minutes past nine, Tuesday the 7th of November 2023. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're very well this morning. And we look forward to having you on board the 9 till noon show for the next 3 hours and throughout the day, of course, here in Highland Radio. Our lines are open for you right now, as you know yourself. You can give us a call, Caroline and Shannon, taking your calls on 074 91 25000. And if you prefer to WhatsApp or text the programme, it's the same number for both SMS and WhatsApp, 086 60 25000. If you're listening outside of Ireland, outside the Republic, and you want to get involved in the conversation, it's 00353. Drop the first O, of course. 86 60 25000, and that's a good number too if you want to send in your voice notes. If you want to comment via voice note, feel free to use WhatsApp in that manner as well. And of course, your emails from anywhere in the world to comments@highlandradio.com. And don't forget, as always, you can watch the program. We stream it live every day for you on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, where there are captions there as well. There are people who are hard of hearing or have hearing issues that are able to engage with the program that way, which is fantastic. And we're across Facebook as well. And you can also watch in browser from our website. I do forget to mention that from time to time, but there you go. Right, let's start with a look at the papers this morning. The Irish Times: the death toll in Gaza was reported by the Hamas-run health ministry to have risen to more than 10,000 yesterday, with no ceasefire in sight, as a further escalation of fighting on the Israel-Lebanon border increased concerns that the conflict could develop into a much wider regional configuration. After completing the siege of Gaza City, Israeli forces advanced into the city from the north and south, accompanied by intense airstrikes, temporarily crashing the internet and cellular phone networks. Israeli troops were reportedly moving in the direction of the city's biggest hospital, Al-Shifa, beneath which Israel claims Hamas has a major control and command center. More than 40,000 residents are camped out on the hospital compound, believing the area is relatively safe compared with the rest of Gaza. And again, just listening to the coverage, it's actually really quite interesting, because a BBC correspondent in Gaza has written to his bosses concerned with the coverage, that it's not telling the whole truth. But also too, listening this morning to the radio, as you do, switching around the place to see how things are being covered, and not wishing to labour the point, but it is quite interesting again this morning to note that the awful events that happened 1 month to this day, the massacre of 1,400 Israelis, and it was a massacre, is described as such, whereas the deaths of the civilian population in Gaza is not described in the same manner at all. It's just over 10,000 killed with no context, no breakdown, no use of the word massacre. I just thought it an interesting observation. The Irish Independent this morning, we talked about this yesterday, so I thought I'd give you an update on the Education Minister Norma Foley's comments. Primary schools will survey parents for their views before proposing a ban on smartphones under new guidelines to be discussed by Cabinet. So just to let you know, you will be notified by your school to have your say. Schools will be encouraged to liaise with parent associations to gather views on asking all parents not to buy their children smartphones. If a majority of parents are in favour of collectively agreeing to not give their children smartphones, the schools will write to all parents asking them to sign up to the initiative. Education Minister Norma Foley will bring a memo to Cabinet this morning setting out the guidelines for primary schools seeking to introduce the smartphone ban. Again, not really easy to get a sense of what the majority of you out there think. Would you be in favour of it? Now, it would not be, well, they can be banned from school, but it would be encouraging parents not to give phones to children under 13. As I say, I don't know how that will go with parents. Would the majority be in favour of that or not? Because we don't really have a big enough sample to be able to determine that with any certainty. On to the Irish Daily Mail this morning. Almost 700,000 people in this country are living below the poverty line, a new study has shown. So almost, well, it's almost a million, it's 0.7 million. 700,000 people are below the poverty line, not on it, but below it. This equates to one in every eight people in Ireland. But for children, the figure is higher at 1 in 7 or 190,000 under-18s, according to a report from Social Justice Ireland. The poverty line is defined as 60% or less of the nation's average income. This would mean a minimum disposable income of just under €320 a week for a single person would be required to avoid poverty. The Poverty Focus report released yesterday said child poverty is a reality for 1 in every 7 children in Ireland, about 190,000 children, a stark statistic that raises major questions for fairness and progress. And as well, too, it has to be put in the context of us being told that we are a rich country, that we have a strong economy, that we have full employment. If that is what we are being told, then the question also has to be asked, well, if that is the case, how can it be that 1 in 7 children live below the poverty line? Something about the system is not working correctly, is it? Donald Trump featured in many of the papers. We'll go to the Sun to see what they have to say. A judge threatened to cut Donald Trump's testimony short in his civil business fraud trial. It comes as Trump and Judge Arthur Engoron clashed repeatedly. Judge Engoron told the former US president that he might remove him from the witness stand if he did not answer questions directly. Judge Engoron asked Mr. Trump's lawyer, Christopher Keyes, or Keyes, Mr. Keyes, or Keyes, can you control your client? This is not a political rally. This is a courtroom. And I think what was quite interesting, too, is that there wasn't a massive presence of either pro or anti Trump people outside the courtroom. Some reporting that there were more media present than regular folk backing or opposing Mr. Trump. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar has been asked that old question as we head towards an election. Would you coalesce with Sinn Féin? He's ruled out forming a Fine Gael coalition government with Sinn Féin, which doesn't surprise me. I mean, Fine Gael were not that far away, I think, from the last. In fact, I seem to recall Leo Varadkar threw up the option that maybe Fine Gael, it would be good to have a term out of office, particularly as opposed to re-establish its identity as a standalone party. That was ahead of the last election. But anyway, he's not going to go into government with Sinn Féin if it means getting into power again. He was asked yesterday if he would work with Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou MacDonald after the next general election. The Taoiseach replied, happy to work with Deputy MacDonald on certain issues, but forming a government's very simply out of the question. Very strong language that you wouldn't hear from Micheál Martin, for an example. Mr. Varadkar has previously described Sinn Féin as an ultra-nationalist, radical-left, populist, Eurocritical party. He said its policies are anti-business and would be a disaster for Ireland. So it would be very hard for him, and anything can happen in politics, of course, but it would be very hard for the party to backtrack from that. And all of the papers full of pictures of the Northern Lights. Stargazers were treated to the sight of a breathtaking natural phenomenon as the Northern Lights, or Aurora Borealis, were visible across the country on Sunday night. Now, I've seen, is this controversial, right? I've seen loads of fantastic pictures, look wonderful. But I don't know if it really counts. As beautiful as they are, and this is not to upset any photographers out there, but if you're using time lapse and you're not really capturing what the eye can see, is it really that spectacular? I mean, some of it is amazing, but I've seen some of the videos and what people actually see with their naked eye. I couldn't see anything, and I didn't really get it. But people are using their phones and time lapsing, I think. I don't know how it works. And we're seeing met with these most beautiful images. But like, if a tourist was looking at it, could they see that? Honestly, anyone out there, let me know. Can you see this as it is portrayed in the pictures with the naked eye? Because a tourist might go, or someone from down the country might go, right, I'm heading to North Donegal to see this amazing, amazing spectacle, which is, don't get me wrong, but can you really see that with your naked eye, what all these pictures are showing? And if you can't, should it really have a caveat saying this was captured, you know, with time lapse or overexposure of the image or whatever? Again, not wishing to upset anyone, maybe it's controversial, but if that's not really what you can see with the naked eye, does it really count? We're joined on the programme now by Father Jim McGonigal, retired parish priest in the Derry Diocese. Father, thank you for joining us this morning, and I wish we were speaking about anything else other than what we are going to speak about, and that's the awful loss of Thomas and Alana in a road traffic collision in the early hours of yesterday morning. It is incredibly difficult to comprehend, Father.
It's very difficult. I must say it was one of the most traumatic experiences in my 60 years as a priest when I was called out in the middle of the night, and especially to two people that I knew and families that I knew. But it was traumatic. But again, it's not about us. It's about the two families who have suffered such a terrible loss.
And you knew Alana particularly from a very young age,
particularly well, because she was prematurely born in Altmagelvin Hospital, and I was there. And we thought at the beginning it would be, she would lose, but she won her fight, and she turned out to be one of the most wonderful young people that I've known in my lifetime.
And also Thomas, leaving cert pupil at Mobile Community
well,
College.
Thomas, yeah, he was in Mobile Community College because his family had more connections, even though they were living in Gemstone Park in Glenealy, they had more connections with the Mobile Greencastle Parish, and that's where his funeral would be because both his father and mother are from there, and their connections would be more with, in that direction. But I would have known him when he was at the primary, the national school. The three of them, Patrick McKinney and both Alana and Thomas, they all attended together the national school in Glenealy. Mm-hmm. So, and during that time, of course, I was involved there during the first confessions, communions, and visited the school regularly. I knew them all as kids, but the problem too is that, not the problem, but the fact that Alana was at the Carndonagh Community School and Thomas was at the Mobile mm-hmm. Community College meant that all those young people from all those schools are involved. So it's and their families. So it's the burden will be shared, I know, but at the same time, it's very, very difficult for the whole community.
And you mentioned Patrick Hope, who was also involved in the collision. Hopefully, he has a speedy and full recovery. And also,
I think he is making a good recovery. Okay. I was talking to some of his family yesterday.
Right. Well, that's encouraging. It's still incredibly difficult, or going to be very difficult for him. And there was also a fourth young person that was in the vehicle but dropped off a little early. We have to think on them as well.
Yeah, especially Patrick and it's Malarkey for first name. My memory is not so good.
Okay.
Something Annabelle or something like that. So they will need a lot of love and care and prayers as well because, you know, having survived that, it's going to impact on them quite seriously. You know, so they have to be very much remembered at this time too.
And Father, what words can you have for families and friends in such a difficult time, or do you just be with
words,
them?
Words mean very, very little. I think you just have to be there. Mm-hmm. Have to be there as much as you can, and encourage others to be there as well, and to listen. And of course, you offer words of support as well. But just know that what they need now is a lot of love, a lot of care, a lot of prayers, mm-hmm. and. They knowing that everybody is concerned and everybody is with them. Mm-hmm. And please God, God will help them and the whole community will help them. It's not going to be easy, but they will come through. They're very resilient in this community. I know them well over the years because I'm still involved in ministry even though I'm retired in both Kildare and Mobile in these times.
And there's absolutely no doubt in how both Alana and Thomas have been described that in their short life had such an impact on people. They seem to be two absolutely wonderful young people, Father.
Absolutely. And they were all great friends. Mm. They were all, and again, working in Simpsons together built up a great camaraderie between them. And they were all on their way home. After working on Sunday night, and this sadly had to happen. And these are going to be four very difficult days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Funerals are not to Friday. Mm-hmm. And as you may know, Thomas's And Anna's funeral is in St. Mary's in Bochum at 11 o'clock on Friday, and Thomas's funeral is in Ballybrack, St. Mary's Ballybrack in Mabill at 2 o'clock on Friday. So it enables all those who know them both and love them to be at both places. So it's going to be a very difficult, tough 4 days for everyone, especially for the families themselves.
And I suppose we have to keep a close eye too on their peer group father, because this will be for many
exactly,
the first major loss of their lives.
Exactly. We have to think about them and be there for them as well.
How are you, Father? You've been through an incredible... I know your thoughts are with the family and the friends and the victims, but you've been through an incredibly traumatic couple of days yourself as well, Father. How are you keeping? Are you okay? Are you speaking to anybody?
I have plenty of friends.
Good. That's good to hear.
Loads of friends. Mm-hmm. The phone has been ringing quite a bit, Ken.
Very good, Father.
And I still have my own family around as well, and they've been...
That's good. Okay. Well, you have to look after yourself as
well. I'm a Cairn man myself, so I'm not too far away.
Okay, Father. Thanks for helping us to come to terms with this in speaking about Thomas and Alana, and also remembering Patrick and the fourth occupant of the vehicle that was dropped off a little earlier. And we just join with you and hope that family and friends just can gather whatever strength they can to get through these next few days and weeks and months and years in reality, Father.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay.
Okay. Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay.
Take care.
Okay, bye.
That's Father Jim McGonagall there, retired parish priest in the Derry Diocese. And you're very welcome back to the programme. And I don't want to come across as if I'm trying to take some high moral ground or something, but... it's very unpleasant for me to see pictures in the papers today of the vehicle in which Thomas and Alana very sadly lost their lives. Someone's went to an awful lot of bother to, it seems, to scramble to get that picture. And I just don't see what purpose it serves at all. And it's reproduced in a number of papers today. But anyway, unfortunately, it does seem to be the way things are. Okay, John Boyle is the General Secretary of the INTO, and we welcome him back onto the programme. John, good to see you again.
Thanks very much, Greg. Good morning to you all.
Thank you very much for talking to us. Okay, so the INTO survey has highlighted an acute teacher shortage, which is impacting vulnerable children and their vital school supports, and we'll talk about how the shortage of teachers is leading to that. But the headline figure... 1,202 long-term vacancies. Is there a geographical difference in the situation? Like, are these problems more acute in more urban areas, or is the problem spread across the country, John?
Yeah, actually, Greg, the figures are even worse than what you said, because there's two different sets of figures.
Uh-huh, 809, sorry, there's a current shortfall of 809 permanent fixed-term and long-term substitute teachers, and it's anticipated having an additional 1,202 long-term vacancies within the next 3 months, which would tally up to over 2,000. Thanks for that, John.
No bother, Greg, but you see, the reason I drew attention to that matter is because, like, that is a serious crisis, no matter what way we look upon it. And the Department of Education had the audacity yesterday to come out and try and play the whole thing down, saying that, look at the majority of posts are filled. Like, I've been involved in teaching for over 35 years, and in all of my life, I've never come across a situation that 2,000 groups of children in the primary schools and the special schools of Ireland had no guarantee of a teacher for a long part of the year, in many cases for the whole year. Permanent jobs been unfilled. So it's a serious issue, and that's why we did the survey, because we were told this time last year that 99.5% of these jobs were filled. And the government were acknowledging at that time that there was a big issue around substitution, which I know that's certainly a feature in County Donegal, particularly, you know, in Letterkenny, where the schools are big, you know, not having cover for your classes and the teacher job sick or whatever. But the phenomenon of having real jobs, you know, long-term work unfilled is very, very new. Very much geographical, as you suggested. It's It's probably in the rent pressure areas, to be fair. They would include Louth down as far as Wicklow, all of Dublin, Meath and Kildare. That's where the vast majority of these longer-term vacancies are. But it's not exclusive now to that part of the world. There's up to 20% of the positions that are unfilled are outside of that area as well. And I want to emphasise the survey was primarily focusing on long-term work. Now, we also know that on top of that, we're going to be getting stats fairly soon from the department showing the number of teacher absences, whether that's going to doctor's appointment or whether it might be teacher getting married or whatever the case may be, that those positions are not filled either. And that's nationwide. And that's despite the fact that we had success that government put in a supply panel system to cover teacher absences, but that's hit or miss. I mean, there's only something like three teachers covering the whole of the Greater Letterkenny area on that scheme, which means that it's first come, first served, and there's many a day that there's teachers' absences not covered. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, the government pulled out the cover for certain absences back in 2013. So if the teacher now has a very, very sick relative, but they have to bring in an emergency to a hospital, they don't get sub cover for that anymore, whereas they used to back in the day. So this is all a symptom of the downgrading of the profession, as well as the geographical issues around rent pressure areas.
What I was going to say, John. You know, I mean, particularly when you look at where the problems are more acute, and as you've quite rightly pointed out, it's not exclusive to those areas. It's the general societal issues that are problematic here, aren't they, in terms of, you know, access to accommodation, the cost of it, how much you're left over with at the end of the week. So how would the government address that successfully, do you think?
Well, I suppose from our perspective, that's not the only issue. And I will answer the question about how they can address that, because as a trade union movement on the Irish Congress of Trade Unions, I'm on the Executive Council, going to be going to a meeting now shortly. We've been running a Raise the Roof campaign around drawing attention to the deficiencies in relation to housing policy for some time now. And I've often suggested that perhaps it's time that we look at what's happening in some other jurisdictions, that frontline workers, now I'm not just talking about teachers here, I'm talking about the people who have to go to their workplace every day. And they would be guards, teachers, nurses, retail workers in the shops and so on. People who have to go to work every day, that maybe government needs to look at within their housing policy of defined housing or incentives for people like that in terms of not only their rent, but particularly maybe being able to have affordable housing to be able to get onto the housing list. And I know that there's a lot of discussions happening in the political world around all of that, but that would be a longer term solution. We believe that the solution to this crisis in Ireland, be it in rural Ireland where you can't get the substitute teachers, or in the urban areas where you can't even get permanent teachers, Gael Scouls, where they can't get enough staff, special schools. The solution is make the profession more attractive. It used to be attractive up until 2009. And it's no coincidence, in my view, that the things that happened between 2009-2013 are really coming home to roost now. Now, they would be namely the cuts to the new entrant pay at that time drove thousands of young teachers, including many from my area, County Donegal, to Australia and to Dubai and to various other shores. And we are trying to get those people back. And why would they come back into a system that's, first of all, underfunded? I mean, the minister's out there talking nonsense this morning again about mobile phones in primary schools. Mobile phones are not a problem in primary schools. The problem in primary schools is we don't have enough funding to run the place. We don't have any promotional system for teachers to support the principal teachers and to give them a rung up on the ladder, because that was all stripped out in 2009. We have the biggest class sizes in Europe. We have difficulties as well with specific areas, be they island schools, Gaeltacht schools, Gaelscoileann, or special schools. If you improved yourself in such a way that you did specialist training to work in a special school, you used to get a diploma for special education. It was €2,000. That was stripped out in 2012. Is it any wonder that we don't have people specializing and prepared to work in special education, which is very, very challenging when they don't, when that little incentive is no longer there? So we're asking government to have another look at this, the damage that they did back in those years, the teachers that they drove out of Ireland, at least give them an amnesty to come back here. And what I mean by an amnesty is for that cohort of people who left these shores in 2011, 12, 13, who are away 10, 12 years, give them 12 years credit for the time they were abroad. When you come back here, you're not going to have to give up your position in a promotion post in Dubai or in Australia. That when you come back here, you have a career path and that you'll get some credit for the experience that you built up abroad. So they need to put money on the table here, not into teachers' pockets. That's not what I'm saying.
Well, it's an interesting point you make, particularly I think about the fact that some might feel the conversation about mobile phones and rushing that through cabinet is a bit of a distraction. But also, too, if you have moved away and you wish to come home, do you want to start from square one? And the obvious answer to that would be no. So that would make an awful lot of logical sense. And, of course, The thing too, which is really quite unsettling, is there are then children who are losing their SNA as they are redeployed within the school, students and people perhaps not properly qualified to teach children taking up the head of some of these classes. That's all something parents should be concerned about.
Yeah, well, just for absolute clarity now, it's not necessarily the SNA now that would be redeployed, but there's another worker in the school called a SET teacher. That is a special education teacher. Every school has one of those nowadays.
You are correct. And again, thank you for correcting me there.
No problem at all, Greg. This is all sort of education lingo, so don't expect you to be up to speed in all of this, but you're certainly very interested in education because you've had us on so many times. But in terms of our survey, what it bore out in the first 25 days of the school year, in the first 25 days of the school year, 1,100 schools now is all that answered this survey. That's a third of the schools. So this could be way worse than actually the survey is pointing out, but we'll base it on what we heard and what we learned from the survey. On over 5,000 occasions in 25 days in Ireland, a special education teacher had to be plugged out, pulled out of their position to cover for a class teacher. And in a number of cases, the special education teacher was doing it for the whole month of September. Because basically, if children come into our primary schools, we'd be different than the secondary. The main thing the parents want to know at the start of the year is, who's going to be teaching my child for the year in the class? Because the children all spend most of the day in the class, 5.5 hours. Who's going to be teaching the class? If the principal has a lack of teachers in the school to teach the mainstream classes, the principal's going to pull teachers out of special education. In a Jewish school, the extra teachers for helping children with disadvantage, they're all going to be pulled. The teachers helping the Ukrainian children with the EAL supports for language, they'll all be pulled out of those positions into the mainstream classes. And who's suffering here? The most vulnerable children, the children who need the help the most. And that was one of the most starkest findings in our survey, that in the first 25 school days of the school year, on over 5,000 occasions, in these surveyed schools, that was happening. If you take that for the whole year, that would be 50-something thousand occasions for the whole year.
But I think too, it is, as well as for the students, that's a special education teacher would assist. Those absences would have a much greater impact on that student potentially than a student that doesn't require an SET as well. So we don't really know the full extent of the impact of such measures. Really, it's quite worrying.
Very worrying. Now, I suppose what we can surmise is that we know that the remote learning didn't work so well for the children with the special educational needs during COVID, and we know that there was a deficit to begin with, and there was an intention to try to make up those gaps. And one way to make that up was to have individual attention from these teachers that are allocated by the department. To be fair to them, there's nearly 20,000 such teachers in the system, primary and secondary, to help vulnerable children. But I suppose the government needs to start acknowledging that because of their poor planning and because that the profession is no longer as attractive as it used to be, and because so many of our young teachers were driven out of this country and are attracted to go to places where they're actually valued, because we have these underlying difficulties on top of the housing crisis, they are going to have to start tackling this. And to date, one of the things that they've done, to be fair, is they have allocated 610 extra places in the colleges. You know, a demand of ours was to get 1,600 extra places in the colleges. But we all know that a teacher, it takes 4 years to train a teacher. So in the short term, the only way I see this being resolved is, apart from the work that they're trying to do to get more housing and more affordable housing, they're going to have to look at the national pay talks coming up now. At how are they going to make teaching more attractive by giving people a career path, by incentivizing people to work in these areas? And one of the ways to get your staff in a special school is reinstating diploma allowance. One of the ways to get staff in disadvantaged schools would be to do what they promised to do back in the noughties, and give the teachers there an opportunity to upskill. And whilst they're upskilling, then when they achieve that qualification, that they get a small allowance for. These are the type, put money on the table, basically, to try to, because they did it for nurses last year, Greg. When they couldn't find nurses to go into the hospitals last December, what did they do? They got the Department of Finance to agree that a trainee nurse could get €135 per night, four nights of the week, to work, to live close to a hospital. But when it comes to teachers, they don't seem to have that as a priority, the education
system. I just want to put one thing to you, because I know you have another meeting and I won't hold you very longer, but I want to read this to you rather than when you're off air. Could you ask John how in 1989 one teacher could manage a class of 28? Now in 2023 you have a teacher, an SNA, a teaching assistant, a resource teacher helping in one class. It's got too cushy a number. Teachers get dinners brought in, get a clothing allowance. It's worrying how much money do they need? The only sector job that never stops moaning.
Yeah, well, first of all, teachers don't get dinners brought in. There's a new, the Department of Social Protection has a policy now of bringing in hot dinners, which is happening in lots of other parts of the world for children. And I would argue that maybe it's not as needed for all children. These measures cross the board, free books for every single family in Ireland, certainly a cost of living crisis, it does help families. But at the expense of being able to employ teachers, I mean, it's the same budget coming from the government, and they seem to put more priority into the vote-catching measures like the free dinners. As for the class sizes, we have the largest class sizes in Europe. That reader, that listener's talking about 28 in a class. 28 was an outrageous size of a class at a time when a revised curriculum was written specifically for 20 children. That happened in 1999, 24 years ago. We now have another curriculum ever since then. The classrooms of Ireland are totally different nowadays. We have children with special educational needs no longer going to special schools. They're in the mainstream class,
which is good.
We have children from foreign countries who arrived here and were very welcome here, who had no English as a first language, have to get extra supports. We have no mental health supports of any nature out there in society, because those parts of the public service have been stripped of resources as well. And all the parents of Ireland and the Irish society expect schools to be able to do so much nowadays. And teachers are absolutely pinned to their collar to be able to look after the classes that they have. I think parents want, it was proven this week in a survey done not by us, but by the medical council, that the most trusted profession in Ireland is the teaching profession, even more than doctors. Now, we were delighted to hear that, but there's not much point in being trusted if you don't actually have a teacher in the first place. So our campaign here is for the benefit of children, to get them teachers. And we have to call it out. Government is failing these children, and the most vulnerable children are losing out. And I wouldn't be doing my job only for, I would be drawing attention to the fact that up to 5,000 children, vulnerable sets of children, didn't have a special ed teacher in September. There's something seriously wrong with the government that's out this morning talking about the use of mobile phones. They don't even use them in primary schools to begin with, and putting priority into those issues rather than dealing with the real issues. I guess these things don't capture votes, but I think parents are going to be onto their TDs about this, and parents are not going to suffer much longer. The fact that the children are, their rights to an education are being infringed by the fact that the government won't even provide their child with a teacher.
Right, strong words indeed. Listen, thank you very much, John. I appreciate all of your time this morning. John Boyle, INTO General Secretary there. Any views? 086 60 25,000 WhatsApps and texts. Terry Doherty joins us on the programme now. Terry, thanks for taking the time to speak to us today.
You're very welcome, Greg. And it's with a mixture of sadness and disgust that I join you this morning. My brother John was a detective constable in RUC station in Noma, and on a visit home to our widowed mother, he was ambushed and murdered on the 20th of October, 1973. Now, the 20th of October, 2023, was the 50th anniversary of John's murder. Mm. And the memorial service that was held in the cemetery in Castleton was highlighted very much on radio and television. And the large crowd that came there to be with the Doherty family was indicative of the respect and the esteem that John was held in. We had the Reverend Canon Charles McCartney, chaplain to the RUC George Cross Association, OMA, and Father Colm O'Doherty, parish priest, Clonley Lifford, both who officiated in the dedication and the service of remembrance and the laying of a poppy wreath. Now, sometime during the darkness hours of the 4th, Saturday the 4th of November, individuals invaded the sacred space of John's grave to steal, yes, to steal a memorial stone and a poppy wreath. I don't know who or what they represent. I suppose evil would be an appropriate word. But if they think that by removing the memorial stone and the poppy wreath will bring an end to John being remembered and honoured, they're badly mistaken.
What do you think, after John? Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead, Terry. I won't interrupt.
Okay, Greg. You asked a question, yeah?
I was going to say, what do you believe motivated the person or persons responsible to do this?
Just because John was a member of the RUC and highly... he was and what he represented. And it's just because John was a member of the RUC. And shortly after John's death, a memorial plaque was erected inside the door of the old RUC station in Oma. It held pride of place. And it actually survived and became unscathed with the bombing of the station. And when the new station opened, the stone was then transferred and mounted on a wall especially selected in the new station. And John is there along with all his colleagues who are named on the wall, who also made the ultimate sacrifice. And they are remembered and honoured every year. And I thank the committee and OMA who are responsible for organising the memorial service every year in OMA. And this year will be no different. They are honoured and remembered and always will. And as long as the Doherty name exists, John will be honoured and remembered. And like the phoenix rising out of the ashes, the Doherty family will rise above this. And we won't lower ourselves to the level that those individuals that invaded the space of a graveyard where everyone thinks graveyards and graves are a sacred place.
Just so we're clear, the grave was marked previously and there was never an issue. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, there was never an issue before. But we were a bit apprehensive once the memorial stone was placed on the grave. And in fairness to Ross Hussey, chairman of the RUC George Cross Association, OMA branch, he contacted me and wished to replace the stone. And I thanked Ross for his intentions, his good intentions. I thanked him from the bottom of my heart. And I said, Ross, no, we won't give these individuals another chance to steal a memorial stone from the grave. I may meet some of these people in the streets, I don't know. I haven't heard from the Gardaí. I haven't had a word from the Gardaí on the situation.
Does that bother you?
Well, I think it'd be nice if we had some member of the family had been contacted by the Gardaí.
Because you would see this obviously as a crime.
Yeah, it is a crime. Yeah, to steal something. Yeah, it is a crime of theft. But John will always be remembered. Mm-hmm. They'll never put the Doherty family down or John's name, regardless of who or what they represent. And I'm sure those individuals, there are monuments erected all over the place, and I'm sure those individuals wouldn't like those monuments to be vandalised.
Are you interested in the recovery of the memorial plaque? Because it was taken, it's probably somewhere.
No, I have no hope in the recovery of it. Those people are hell-bent on removing the memorial stone and the poppy wreath. You know, it was easy targets. Like, you have to be a very brave man. Imagine being a very brave man. Like, the threat offered by a memorial stone and a poppy wreath, and I'm sure you get the sarcasm in my voice, Greg, for those individuals to steal the stone and the poppy the wreath, oh, they had to be brave men. Oh, my, my, they had to be brave men.
No one was ever held responsible for the death of John.
Yeah, there was a trial in the Central Crumlin Court in Dublin, but they weren't convicted.
Okay. Right, Terry, strong, passionate words, obviously, as people might understand. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much, Greg, for having me on. Thank you.
Okay, Terry Doherty there. 086 60 25,000. A caller says, oh my God, that poor priest you had on earlier, my heart goes out to him. He sounds so upset. May God help everyone involved. And indeed, you can hear it in the voice. Good morning, Greg. Imagine 700,000 people are below the poverty line when 4 billion of our tax money is sent to Ukraine. This is our money, the taxpayers, not the government's. That 4 billion has gone to pay people's wages and to give small business loans. Our money should be spent on us, the people of Ireland, not Ukrainians. You see, again, and I'm sorry to labour the point, the money has not been taken from 700,000 people below the poverty line and transferred to Ukrainians. I mean, that's easy because you're angry at Ukrainians almost. In other words, why are they getting our money? But the bottom line is there's a ton of money, billions of money, euro, that's been put away that could be used to help the 700,000. It's not either or. We can help other people and we can also help the 700,000 people. The money has not been taken from your pocket and given to somebody else. So it hasn't been taken out of your pocket and given to someone else. What happens is there's someone standing in front of you with 100 euro and they've given 50 to the other person and put the other 50 in their pocket. The money never hasn't, it's not that, that the resources have been taken from looking after the 700,000 people. There just aren't, what some would say, policies in place to ensure that we lift those almost 200,000 children. Many of them could well be Ukrainians as well, by the way. They're not distinguished by their background or race or nationality. If the money was spent correctly, people would feel that those people could be lifted out. I mean, I presume the food banks in this county are still under great pressure. If anyone working with some of the food banks are listening, let me know what the situation is there. We talked about it in great detail a couple of months back. I presume everything isn't rosy in the garden now, but it's very important that if you are angry, direct it in the right place. It's not your Ukrainian neighbour that's taken your money. It's that maybe money has been spent in that direction, but it doesn't mean there isn't money that could be spent to lift the 700,000 people below the poverty line, above that poverty line. Thank you, Greg, on honesty of exposing the reality of time-lapse photography, re-Aurora. No, the naked eyes do not see painted skies of green and pink, and the real Aurora, as seen by the naked eye, are flowing, dancing wisps of coloured gases. It should be presented as what it is, right? If that's not what you can see with the naked eye, I think we'd be better off absolutely stating how the image was captured. That's all. Because I could be down in court thinking, I'm going to Donegal to see this amazing... And then you go up there and it's not quite as advertised, perhaps. But anyway, no one's doing it for nefarious or bad reasons. It's just how the images are captured, I'm sure. All right, listen, we're going to take a break for the news and obituary notices. We'll be right back thereafter with Community Garda information with Garda Sergeant Eunan Walsh. That's coming up after the news and obituaries, that and so much more besides. So as I say, stay right where you are.